offering. A humble pranam to Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As Bishu told you, I have the company of Brother Hari Shankar from the Shri Sathya Sai Center Trust. Like the last time I joined you as part of this discourse, we didn't have a episode last week, given the extended session in the Mandir as part of the Dashara celebrations. But we are here to continue that discourse, a special discourse which we took up, though it is not part of the 1990 Summer Course series. This was the discourse which Swami gave immediately after the series concluded. The first discourse which Swami gave after the Summer Course, that is during the Guru Purnima of that year, 1990. And the reason why we took up this discourse is that it, in many ways, is a summary for that entire series. And even as we were doing the summary for the series after we had completed the discourses, we thought it would be a good thing to take up this discourse as part of that series. And to continue where we left last time, I invite Brother Hari Shankar to join me. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Supreme, yeah.
Just a couple of days back, I met one of our listeners, a very good well-wisher and very well-known to all of us. And she had this complaint. She told us that I'm not very fond of this program, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. And the reason she said was, of course, very beautiful. She said that, you know, we read a lot of scriptures, we read a lot of works by spiritual masters. Among all that we have read, the most simplest is what Swami says in his discourses. So this idea of somebody sitting here and trying to simplify what Swami gave in the most simple form doesn't seem to go down well with us. And of course, in the very beginning when we started this program, we said that this is not an attempt to simplify Swami's discourses, because we concede that there's nothing which is more simpler, nothing can be given more simpler than the way Swami has put it.
Yeah.
But I think somewhere down the line we've given the impression to people that we're simplifying Swami's discourses. But definitely that's not the case, because I think in many ways, the way Swami taught most of these the scriptural truths was so subtle that I think many people many times missed it completely.
Plus the things that Swami talks about, it engenders so many other thoughts.
Right.
It's like it triggers, you know, we see parallels in something somebody else has said, or something from the scriptures, or something from our own experience. And it is kind of worthwhile to share these.
Right.
Like pretty much all of us are pupils in front of Swami. We are devotees of Bhagwan and we are all students in front of Him.
Right.
So there's absolutely no question of a commentary on Swami's discourse or trying to explain Swami's discourse. But pretty much whatever thoughts engender from having listened to what Swami said, whatever insights it generates for us, I think that's what we'll endeavor to share during these programs.
And the beautiful thing with Swami is, you know, the context in which the same message has been given would always be adapted to whom he was, based on to whom he is talking to.
Yeah.
You know, when it was students, the message was given in a different way, maybe relating to the subjects they were studying.
Yes.
Or when interacting with maybe some of the trust members, the trustees, the instructions would be in a manner which would be in line with what instructions Swami was giving them.
Right.
Or sometimes when we were talking to some of the ladies who were in Swami's kitchen, some of the aunties who were given the fortune of cooking for Swami, the way Swami would teach them lessons. You know, the way I think some of the elderly devotees have shared this with us, when Swami would tell people, even when you cut vegetables, what are the thoughts you should have when you perform an act like cutting a vegetable? Imagine that you are cutting short your ego. Imagine that you are, you know, cooking, making soft that which is untenable. You know, some of these things like that. So I think that is what one form is, of course, the discourses which we constantly hear and the many repository which we have.
Right.
But the same message is found in the so many interactions which Swami has given so many devotees. And I think that has been our endeavor, dear listeners, to share some of those things in the light of the message which Swami is giving in these discourses.
Right.
And coming to the discourse we are dealing with right now, the Guru Purnima discourse of the year 1990. As I was just telling Brother Hari, in many ways this discourse is actually a kind of what Adi Shankara told in his very important work, The Atma Bodha. Or it's supposed to be a concise work where I think it's about 20 or 30 couplets.
Right.
Which give a complete understanding of from how the one became to the many, mm-hmm. to how each one of us confuse ourselves to be the body, the various things involved in this human life, as we've gone through in the discourse, the different sheets of the body, I mean of the human existence, the different aspects of the mind, the senses, and the different processes which led to the creation and all that. And this discourse is more or less follows the same pattern. And quickly going through what Swami told in the first part of that discourse. Hmm. Swami spoke about how the body is completely inert. Swami used the word paripurna jadam. You know, that is so beautiful the way Swami said it's completely inert. And what a mistake it is to relate only to this body and to think that you're just this body. And the whole endeavor is to separate yourself from this understanding that you're the body. And Swami explained the different things, the five pranas, and which form the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and that which collects the impressions from birth to birth, and how that, in a way, guides your life.
Defines us.
Defines your life. Because
our personality.
You know, many times we often say that we are prisoner of our circumstances.
Right.
But the same circumstance leads one to behave in a different way.
Absolutely, yes.
Right? We see that every day in our lives.
And it's like Swami says, it's a function of the chitta, the sum total of
right.
pretty much all the impressions that we have collected
exactly.
over lives.
In fact, it's a debate, I think, in criminology right now.
Yeah.
When you are giving you're handing out a conviction to somebody who's done a crime,
right.
you have to see the background in which he's been brought up or she's been brought up,
yes.
the family they come from. Because you have these many issues of broken families leading to criminals.
Yeah, epigenetic as they call it. No? Like the,
okay, right. Yeah. But you know, given, even if you look at that, there's so many people who have come out from such families who have really stood out as exemplars in character.
And Swami continues to emphasize the function of Viveka.
Right.
It's like the muscle that we have to develop in order to not succumb to whatever our mind, our tendencies are. Like.
Right.
So in that sense, Swami holds us responsible because he says, I have given you the buddhi with the faculty of discrimination and it is up to you to use it.
Right. And that's what Swami says that, you know, most of it in the discourse which Swami gave on freedom, Swami said, actually speaking, you don't seem to have any freedom because everything is being controlled by your vasanas and
Absolute.
You know what is stored in your chitta. But there is a little amount of flexibility
maneuvering.
Or maneuvering yeah. ability which is given to you, as you said, which is contained in the buddhi or the discriminatory power.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think all that you read, the moral classes you go through and the value systems which are being taught to as the children and families, is to empower that discriminating ability.
Absolutely.
To give you the strength to choose the right, you know, the wrong, even when doing the wrong is the easy path.
Mm.
I think even the Bhagavad Gita is all about that. And Swami would often say that Duryodhana would declare, you know, I know what is right and wrong, but I don't have the strength to follow what is right.
Yes.
And I'm not, I fear to follow the right path.
Right path, yeah.
And then Swami goes on to explain about the dream states, the different dream states which gives you an understanding of how this life itself is a dream.
Right.
If
yeah.
you understand and if you look at how the difference between your waking state, your dream state and your deep sleep state, you can understand what it is when you say that this life is a dream.
Yeah, the last time I think we discussed about the experience of King Janaka.
Right.
So like he had certain experiences when he was awake and very contrasting experiences in his dream state.
Right.
And so when he woke up, he was not, as Swami would say, idi nijama, adi nijama.
Right.
He posed a question to the people around him, which one of these is real?
Right.
And so that is the challenge which Swami puts to us, that why do you take even what you observe or what you experience in the waking state, so-called waking state, why do you take that to be real?
Right. In fact, Swami said one very beautiful story where he said, in a dream your friend comes and betrays you or treats you badly.
Mm.
And in the waking state, you take your friend to task.
Yeah, and he denies any relation to that incident.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it mostly comes from the, you know, the ephemeral nature of everything else. You know, why we are able to look at the dream and say that it's unreal. Because in the waking state, the dream state is such a small period in time.
Exactly.
So it's easy for us to say that something which does not last cannot be real.
Absolutely.
And Swami is saying the same thing is with your waking state. And because you are living through this waking state, you think that this is what is the reality.
And as we discussed last time, Swami says that sleep is like a short death.
Right.
Hinting that that after your death, pretty much you'll see whatever you experience in this life similarly to be a dream. You'll have woken up from that dream.
Right. And I think that's pretty much where Swami stopped. And of course, Swami gave a couple of those very powerful Vedantic analogies, that of the rope and the snake.
Yeah.
And then the waves and the ocean.
Yes, so that's where we kind of signed off last time.
Right.
Where Swami, he gives this example of like, how do we all, you know, I think the analogy that Swami was giving was about 10 people in the same room, they all dream entirely different dreams.
Right.
And yet Swami says that they are all aspects of that one consciousness, one Brahman, Supreme Brahman. And to explain that, Swami gave the example that this is all ocean, this is all water. And then waves, they rise, and we can see with the way rise and the fall, there's so many complex things that happen.
Right.
And yet all of it is still in the context of being part of that wave.
Right.
And so there's so many different waves, so many different things happening in each particular wave, and yet they're all part of that same one ocean.
Exactly. And it again comes to that, you know, short-lived nature of the wave. Because in front of our eyes, we can see the wave being formed and dissolved.
Yes.
It is easy for us to think that the wave does not have an individual existence of itself.
Exactly.
We can see it clearly as a part of the ocean. I think that is why for Swami it's so easy when he goes on and on saying that, you know, you're not many, you're the one. I think from his point of view, it's so very obvious, and that is the level to which Swami is asking us to raise ourselves and look at the whole picture, look at the whole creation. So we'll continue in the discourse. We've played two clips. We'll play the third clip in that discourse.
Yes.
Manava jivitamanandu ee atmanu annamaya pranamaya manomaya vijnanamaya anandamaya anetundi kappabadinu. But one has to recognize that this atma is governed by the other five types of body, the physical, the life forces, the mind, the intellect, and this pancha kosamana cheta kappapadatam chetane ee atma tattvam anta sulabhamga manaku gocharinchaledu. We are not able to see this atma so clearly because atma is covered by these five sheets. Sarirame annamaya kosam. Physical body is annamaya kosa. Pranamaya, vijnanamaya, manomaya kosamule ee sutta swarupam. This life sheath, mind sheath, intellect sheath are the subtle body. Anandamaya kosame karana sarira. The bliss sheath is the causal body. Idi anandamaya mani peru matrame unnadi kani idi nijanandamu kaadu. The name given is bliss here, but this is not really bliss. Atmanandam yokka pratibimbame ee yokka karana dehamunandu anandamayamane perunu anubhavistunnadi. The causal body is enjoying this bliss seat, which is only a reflection of the real atma. Chandrudu swayam prakashakudu kaadu. Moon is not self-luminous. Suryudu yokka prakashamu chandrudu paina padinappude chandrudu prakashistunnadu. Moon shines when the rays of the sun fall on him. Ade vidhamugare chandrama manaso jatah chacho suryo vajayita. Manasu kevalamu swayam prakashamu kaanatuvanti chandrudu vantedi. Mind, like moon, is not self-luminous. Swayam prakashakudu atmane It is Atma which has got that self-luminosity.
Aa prakashame buddhi paina, manasu paina, indriyamula paina, deham paina padi. ఈ సర్వపుష్ములు కేవలం చైతన్యమంతమైనటువంటి రూపాన్ని ధరిస్తుండాలి.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ద లైట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ ఆత్మ విచ్ ఇల్యూమిన్స్ ఆల్ దీస్ అదర్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద బాడీ ద మైండ్ ద ఇంటెలెక్ట్.
ఆత్మ చైతన్యమే ఈ ప్రపంచమును నడిపించుచున్నది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ దిస్ కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ విచ్ ఈస్ మేకింగ్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఫంక్షన్.
చరాచర ప్రపంచమునకంతయు కూడాను ఈ చైతన్యమే మూలాధారం.
For the moved and unmoving world, it is the cosmos which is the basis.
Kanuka ee mooladhara tattamunu manavudu vismarinchatam chetane samasta kashtamulaku dukkhamulaku vicharamulaku guri avutunnadu.
Man is subjecting himself to various problems, grief and sorrow because he is giving up this root truth.
Sharira indriya mano buddhulu cheta jarugunnatvanti sukha dukkhamulu ఆత్మకు ఏమాత్రము కూడా సంబంధం లేదు.
ద జాయ్ అండ్ సారో ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ బై ద బాడీ ద మైండ్ ద సెన్సెస్ అండ్ ద ఇంటలెక్ట్ డు నాట్ టచ్ ది ఆత్మ అట్ ఆల్.
సూర్య ప్రకాశమును ఆధారం చేసుకుని అనేక మంది అనేక విధమైనటువంటి కర్మలను ఆచరిస్తారు.
డిఫరెంట్ పీపుల్ క్యారీ ఆన్ డిఫరెంట్ యాక్టివిటీ ఫ్రమ్ ద లైట్ విచ్ ద గెట్ ఫ్రమ్ సన్.
కొందరు మంచి కర్మలు ఆచరించవచ్చును, మరికొందరు చెడ్డను ఆచరించవచ్చు.
సమ్ పీపుల్ మే అండర్టేక్ మెరిటేరియస్ యాక్టివిటీ.
కొందరు పుణ్య కర్మములు, కొన్ని పాప కర్మములు చేయవచ్చు.
సమ్ పీపుల్ మే డూ గుడ్ వర్క్, సమ్ పీపుల్ మే
కొందరు ఉపకారములు, మరికొందరు అపకారములు గావించవచ్చు.
సమ్ పీపుల్ మే అండర్టేక్ హెల్ప్ఫుల్ యాక్టివిటీ, సమ్ హార్మ్ఫుల్ యాక్టివిటీ.
కానీ వీటి యొక్క ఫలము ఏమాత్రం కూడా ఆత్మకు చెందదు.
But this action does not touch Atma.
Suryanuku yevaitha karmala yokka phalam kuda chendadu.
The results of action will never go.
Suryudu kevalam sakshi bhootudu maatrame.
Sun God is only a witness.
Ade vidhamugane sharira indriya mano buddhulu yokka pravartanalu yokka phalamulu aatmaku ye maatram kodunu antavu.
In the same
Atma sakshi bhootudu.
In the same way, the results of the actions of the physical body, the sense of the mind and intellect will not touch Atma. Atma is only a witness.
Kani manavudu sharira indriya mano buddhulu yokka samparkamu cheta tadhatmanu pondatam cheta ivanni kudunu Atma yokka prabhavamane bhavistunnadu.
Man considers wrongly that this is Atma because he comes in contact with the sense of the mind, the intellect and the body.
Manase moola karanam.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది మైండ్ విచ్ ఇస్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ అవర్
మనసు. ఇన్ని విధమైన పరిణామాలను పొందుతూ వస్తుంది అది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ మైండ్ విచ్ మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇట్సెల్ఫ్ ఇన్ ఆల్ దీస్ ఫార్మ్స్.
మనస్సును మరిచినప్పుడు అంతా బయలే.
వన్స్ యు ఫర్గెట్ ది మైండ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ బికమ్స్.
మనం ఒక భవనాన్ని నిర్మించుకున్నాము.
వీ హ్యావ్ క్రియేటెడ్ వన్.
ఈ భవనము లోపల పడక గది అని ఒక్కటి, వంట గది అని ఒక్కటి, భోజనాల గది అని ఒక్కటి, స్నానాల గది అని ఒకటి మనం వేరు వేరుగా నిర్ణయించుకున్నాం.
ఇన్ దిస్ బంగ్లో ఫోర్ గాట్ డిఫరెంట్ రూమ్స్, బెడ్రూమ్, బాత్రూమ్, కిచెన్ రూమ్ అండ్ డైనింగ్ రూమ్ ఆర్ ద ఫోర్ రూమ్.
అయితే ఈ భేదభావములు ఎక్కడ కనిపిస్తున్నాయి?
బట్ వేర్ డూ గెట్ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ డిఫరెన్సెస్?
మన యొక్క అనుభూతిని బట్టి, మన అనుకూలమును బట్టి వాటికి కొన్ని గోడలు హద్దులుగా నిర్మించుకోవటం చేతనే ఈ వేరు వేరు గదులుగా రూపొందుతూ వచ్చాయి.
We create these different rooms by constructing walls in order to be helpful to us and beneficial.
Addamu kattina godalanu kotti vesinappudu anta okka bayile gaane roopondutundi.
Remove the walls that separate, then there will be only one common hall.
Ade vidhamane sarvatra undunadi aatma tattame.
In the same way, aatma tattva is all
around. Deham ane oka goda, indriyam ane oka goda, మనస్సు అనే ఒక గోడ, బుద్ధి అనే ఒక గోడ. ఈ గోడను నిర్మించుకోవటం చేతనే ఈ యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వము మరుగుపడిపోయి అంత గదులు కిందనే రూపొందుతూ వచ్చాయి.
ది రియల్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ ఈజ్ ఫర్గాటన్ బికాస్ వీ హావ్ కన్స్ట్రక్టెడ్ ది వాల్స్ ఆఫ్ ద బాడీ, ద మైండ్ ద సెన్సెస్ అండ్ ద ఇంటలెక్ట్.
సంకుచితమైనటువంటి సంకల్పముల యొక్క ప్రభావం.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఆల్ ఆన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ ద నారో థింకింగ్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్.
విశాలమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్య భావములు కావు.
This is not
a divine broad way of looking at things. Kanuka manavattam inni vidhamulainatundi oka ashanti guri kavadaniki ee abhimanamule moola karanam. It is this attachment which is responsible for all the grief and the sorrow of the man. Vaddanu danchi pottulu biyam nundi veru chesinatlu, just as you can remove the husk from the rice after pounding
niravana manana nitidhyasana dwara kappabadinatvanti annamaya kosam pranamaya kosam manomaya kosam vijnanamaya kosam ఆనందమయ కోసమని పొట్టులు వేరు చేసినప్పుడు నిజమైనటువంటి యొక్క నేను అనేటువంటి ఆత్మతత్వం మనకు రూపొందుతుంది.
ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే వెన్ యూ రిమూవ్ ది బాడీ ది మైండ్ ద ఇంటలెక్ట్ అండ్ ది సెన్సెస్ విచ్ కవర్ దిస్ ఆత్మ బై ప్రాసెస్ ఆఫ్ శ్రవణ మనన నిధిధ్యాస యూ బి ఏబుల్ టు ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ హూ యూ రియలీ ఆర్ యువర్ ఓన్ రియల్ సెల్ఫ్.
ఇది కేవలము శరీర ఇంద్రియ మనోబుద్ధులు కప్పబడినటువంటి పొట్టు వంటివి మాత్రమే.
దిస్ బాడీ సెన్సెస్ మైండ్ అండ్ ఇంటలెక్ట్ ఆర్ లైక్ దిస్ హస్క్ విచ్ కవర్స్ ద గ్రెయిన్.
పొట్టును తీసిన మిగులునది బియ్యమే.
వన్స్ యూ రిమూవ్ దిస్ హస్క్ వాట్ రిమైన్స్ ఈజ్ రైస్.
ఈ బియ్యం పైన పొట్టు ఉండినంత వరకు పునరపి జననం పునరపి మరణం.
యాజ్ లాంగ్ యాజ్ దేర్ ఇస్ హస్క్ ఆన్ దిస్ రైస్ దేర్ విల్ బి అగైన్ రీబర్త్.
ఈ పొట్టును మనం వేరు చేసిటమా ఈ బియ్యమేకు పునర్జన్మ నవిద్యతే. ఇంక దీనికి జన్మనే లేదు.
వన్స్ యూ రిమూవ్ ది హస్క్ ది రైస్ కెనాట్ బి గ్రోన్ ఫర్దర్ దెర్ ఇస్ నో క్వశ్చన్ ఆఫ్ రీబర్త్ అగెయిన్.
కనుకనే ఈ అన్నింటికి బంధనకు మూల కారణము శరీర ఇంద్రియ మనోబుద్ధులే.
దేర్ఫోర్ ఫర్ ది ఎంటైర్ బాండేజ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ది బాడీ సెన్సెస్ మైండ్ అండ్ ఇంటలెక్ట్.
అయితే అన్నింటి కూడా సమంగానే ఉంటున్నది ఆత్మతత్వము.
బట్ ఆత్మ ఇస్ ఫౌండ్ ఇన్ ఈక్వల్ మెజర్ ఇన్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్.
దట్ వాస్ ది థర్డ్ క్లిప్ ఇన్ దట్ డిస్కోర్స్ అండ్ వన్స్ అగైన్ మెనీ మెనీ అనాలజీస్ బ్రింగింగ్ అవుట్ దట్ సేమ్ మెసేజ్ ఆఫ్ యూనిటీ వెరీ బ్యూటిఫుల్లీ.
Right, and to begin with, Swami is talking about the various sheaths, the so-called sheaths that cover what we take to be ourself.
Right.
The Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, Vijnanamaya and Anandamaya Kosha. And just to kind of elaborate, you know, very briefly on what these stand for, Annamaya, Swami said, is the, Anna means food, so he's talking about the inert human body as it is, you know, just the body itself. And then there is the level of pranamaya, when the, you know, the vital airs. Manomaya, and that is the at the level of the mind itself. And in many interpretations, it is considered as the thoughts, the emotions, the feelings that that we go through. So that is at the level of the manomaya. Vijnanamaya is considered equivalent to the intellect,
okay,
which we otherwise have identified as the buddhi. The like when we, you know, identify the buddhi, that is the intellect, kind of discriminates between those thoughts, emotions, feelings,
right,
and a kind of dissociates from that to merely be the witness. So when it is at that stage is when we see the Anandamaya Kosha. So that these are the various levels. In fact, we used to chant one mantra in front of Swami, the Brahmananda Valli.
Right.
And there they actually speak about, you know, the different levels of bliss that are attained and that are like identified with pretty much each one of these koshas. And I was just thinking of this parallel, you know, like how much the degree of suffering that we undergo is related, correlated to the degree to which we are identified with one of these levels.
Okay.
Like for example, when you are at the stage of the Manomaya Kosha and you are completely a slave to your feelings, your emotions, and that's when you can really identify like how much pain each one of us goes through just because of this, being slave to our emotions. Like if somebody asks you whether you have anger or whether anger has you, I think more often you will be answering that it is the anger that has you.
Right.
It is, you are the slave to that anger. So at the, that is the level in which we undergo a lot of suffering. And then when you are at the level of the intellect, when you can discriminate and you kind of sense a little bit of relief that you can discriminate and say that, you know, a feeling of envy or a feeling of jealousy that actually causes you that much pain, you have the tools to be able to kind of attenuate that kind of feeling. But at the level of Anandamaya Kosha, you literally witness, just merely witnessing those thoughts, you know, as they come, as a divine master said, it is like you are standing by the wayside and you are watching the traffic go by. You are not really invested in like jumping into one of those buses or cars as they go past. You are totally not invested in any one of those. You are merely witnessing. And then Swami distinguishes that all of these are, this is not the highest bliss. At the level of Anandamaya Kosha is not when you experience the highest bliss.
Okay.
There is a stage beyond, which of course Aprapya Manasa Saha, as the Upanishad say, it is not something that we can describe. It's very poetically put. The words and the mind, they return. Come back, they return
defeated.
From defeated as they try to describe it.
Mm.
So that, this is the first part. And you know, I was just thinking that in spirituality, we do not subscribe to the view that ignorance is bliss. So the bliss is like when we really truly know ourselves is when a true bliss occurs for us.
Right. In fact, Swami would say that about when you say body attachment has to be given up and you should be detached to your body.
Mm.
In the discourse, Swami says, what is there if you take one peg of alcohol? You know, you will give up your body attachment.
Yeah.
And Swami corrects it. He says, it's not enough if you give up Dehabhimanam.
Mm.
He says, even as you give up Dehabhimanam, you'll have to inculcate Atmabhimanam.
Right.
That is important. And that makes all the difference because, as you said, you know, one thing is to lose control of the body and be detached.
Yeah.
But the other thing is to be in complete control and say that I'm not this body and I'm not going to be ruled.
The distinction between being unconscious and being totally aware.
Totally conscious.
Yeah.
And that's what Swami was saying. And it's very true. What you said about our levels of happiness is the same thing when you talk about the different types of devotees.
Right.
Some would often say artha, arthaarthi, jignasu.
Mm-hmm.
That also is depending on how much one relates to each one of these sheets.
Sheets, yeah.
The one who is so much relating oneself to the Annamaya Kosha would always come to Swami with problems relating to the body, with pleasures which relate to the body.
Mm.
And there would always be some who come to find answers for more subtle questions.
Mm.
And maybe they are ones who are relating more to the Vijnanamaya Kosha. But Swami would say that there are some who are beyond all this. You know, even as devotees, there are devotees who don't seek anything from Swami.
A fortunate few, really.
Right. You know, they really, as one of the very beautiful quotes, I think, in the Chicken Soup series, it says, I don't love you for what you are, but I love you for what I am when I am in your
with
presence.
You. Yeah.
I think because when you say Anandamaya Kosha, when you say it's not the ultimate, it is a state where you feel the bliss. But of course, it's not that constant bliss which cannot be taken away. I think many people felt that when they were in presence of Swami.
Right.
You know, they were able to touch that inner core of bliss in the presence of Swami. And for that, they love Swami.
Yes, that absolutely the simplicity and purity. See, like one of the descriptions they give of what happens when you are in the presence of a master is that all those waves of thoughts that occur in you, they all die down. And many of those thoughts are thoughts like, you know, like, I do not have enough money, or I'm troubled by this, or I'm so weak, I cannot face the world. And in the presence of Swami, literally all those thoughts, they kind of subside. As I recall this description by Paul Brunton in his book. So he speaks of how sitting in the presence of Ramana Maharishi, how a person who had even lost his son, the ultimate grief, and he is able to come out of it, not because Ramana Maharishi uttered even one word of solace. The entire time that this person sat in the presence of the Maharishi, he was looking out of the window. But that had the effect of this person being able to completely detach himself, like from being involved in that world where his son had died, to be able to completely come out of that. I mean, it was just by mere osmosis that this person was able to gain that glimpse into the true reality.
Mm-hmm.
And no words, like nothing could have brought that person out of the grief. But just that one glimpse of what reality is, who he really is, that was able to cure him of his grief. And that is what masters do. And this is what happens in the presence of masters.
Reminded of what one of the old students shared. I think he's a senior of mine in college. When we interviewed him at Radio Sai, he was saying that there was a period of time when he had fallen ill. I think he had contracted one of the diseases which keep you ill for a prolonged period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Some jaundice or malaria or something like that.
Mm.
So close to a week or 10 days he couldn't come for darshan and he was totally bedridden. People were taking care of him. Then after that he was barely up, so he thought he'll come and have Swami's darshan. So after many days he comes for Swami's darshan, and since he was sick and he was so unwell, the warden permitted him to sit somewhere in front so that he could, you know, tell Swami that he has not been keeping well. So Swami would give him prasadam or something. So when Swami walked up to him in a very sorrow face, very gloomily he told Swami, "Swami, I'm not been keeping well, I'm not well, Swami, and I'm having this problem and all that." Swami said, "Is that so?" Chala santosham, and Swami went away. And initially he said, "Why is Swami saying that he's happy? I'm telling that I'm in pain and I'm not able to attend my classes, I'm not able to come for Swami's darshan. And Swami is saying he's so happy." So this boy said that, you know, the next few hours he went and he went back to his room, he was in solitude. He's saying the process of thinking which went through, he said, "I'm having a problem and I'm telling it to Swami, and Swami is saying chala santosham. If Swami has no issue with the problem I'm having, why should I be worried about it?" And he said, you know, all the gloominess which was there because of the 1 week of sickness, it just got lifted away. If Swami is okay with what I'm going through, then why should I be bothered about it?
Right.
You know, that's what happens when you are in the presence of Swami or in the presence of any master.
What a beautiful insight, no?
Really, you know, the feeling of love itself gets you to that state. You know, this boy might not have understood Anandamaya Kosha and Vijnanamaya Kosha, but he felt that if Swami is happy, I'm happy.
Yes, and that is why, you know, like many of us may not be able to even relate to any of these. Like to say to someone that it is better to witness your thoughts is something they may not be able to relate to. But on the other hand, Swami gives us this path of love, the path of bhakti, in which you can do this. You can say that I hand over my situation to you, Swami. I surrender to you. I know that I am not equal to this, but I know that you can take care of it.
Right.
And the kind of the way it empowers you or enables you then to face that situation, it is like, it is something that is beyond description. It is something that I faced myself, and so I can so totally relate to what you were saying, you know.
Right.
And just continuing with what Swami had spoken about, so Swami is talking about the Chaitanya, the Atmic consciousness which makes the cosmos function. And in several discourses, Swami emphasized that this Chaitanya is there everywhere, even in so-called non-living things.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, the consciousness, the one consciousness, it permeates everything. And Swami, to, you know, really for us to be able to understand, he says it is like the lights which we, there's so many in a house or in the Kulwant hall, like so many lamps, and the same current is flowing through all of them.
Right.
And the lights, you know, like the each one of us, we shine according to our ability. Like one of my friends was sharing that he could really relate to this. That each one of us, we can sort of see the joy that is there, or the peace, or the tranquility. It's almost seen on the faces of people. But it is the same consciousness that is there in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has the same access to that bliss. It's just that, do we develop our wattage enough to be able to shine with that true bliss? And that is totally up to us.
Hmm.
No? Like Swami would say, it's literally like that you have a copper, a piece of copper.
Okay.
And with time, a patina of green begins to appear as it gets oxidized. A patina of green begins to appear on that. And then, you know, various other things, impurities get added, like one by one. But you can scrape all that off, and then that is when you can see that it shines with its own luster.
Right. I think, you know, in many ways, as you said, not all of us are in a state of mind to see that oneness, that one conscience illuminating everything.
Mm.
And even the idea that somebody looks at you and says, you know what, Hari and you are one. You're not separate, you're but one.
Yeah.
I think for the uninitiated, it's something which cannot be fathomed at all.
Yeah, even for the initiated.
At least the initiated would pretend to understand, like all of us.
Precisely.
You know, we're talking about all this. But Swami did it in a very, very beautiful way, because I mean, as a student when we sat there, I knew it that the day when Swami would go out and do a certain amount of distribution, let's say that there was some Sevadal and he was giving clothes to them, or there was a group which had come that Swami was going out and giving Padmanamaskar, you could see Swami glowing with joy. You know, you knew that Swami is happiest when he is giving to somebody else.
Absolutely.
You could see it in front of you. And, you know, as students, we used to think that when Swami goes out for a distribution like that, when he comes back, that's the best time to make a prayer, because Swami is so happy.
So happy, yeah.
Feel granted. And, you know, that we always used to write letters when Swami goes out to give Padmanamaskar to a group, because we know that when Swami comes back, Swami will be so happy,
right,
that if we give a letter, Swami will definitely take it. You know, so Swami showed us that there is happiness in giving.
Hmm.
You know, that is the initiation for a person who has never thought of such things.
Absolutely.
Because when you realize that, you know, I am doing something for myself, I'm happy, but I'm also feeling happy when I'm doing something for somebody else,
yeah,
which has got nothing to do with, you know, my life. And I think that is the first time when you get the realization that there's some connection between all of us.
Right.
I think that is the way Swami always did it, and you know, Swami never told it to us when we went out doing Gram Seva. He never told it to us when he sent us out to do anything, any kind of seva. But without our knowledge, Swami said that, I know what will happen when you go and do this.
Right.
I know you will see the
pretty connection. Much, yeah. He granted us that experience, that taste.
Right.
Whatever he was going through. And I would sense this many a time, you know, like during, it is something, I think I relate to it this way, that you see, we would come to darshan and so many things would have happened during the day. We come and sit there and you look at Swami, he's got such a peaceful, placid, smiling face as he comes for darshan. There is something in that with, and immediately those thoughts, they begin to subside in our mind. Then after some time, we begin to feel that happiness. And I think that the access to that kind of bliss is by curing the obsession that we have with ourselves. That self-obsession, that obsession with, you know, our likes, our dislikes, what we hate and what we don't, you know, our preference, we want this, we don't want that to happen. And just by looking at Swami, like, he was complete acceptance of, like, what is there right now, right here, you know. Just merely, you would feel like just giving up that resistance to whatever you're facing that at that moment. And that is all happiness is, really.
It was like, you know, someone who is describing the Kodai session, which was there just before the super specialty hospital started, you know, being constructed.
Yeah.
In that Kodai session, I think Colonel Jogara was there, who was the man in charge of getting the hospital constructed, or one of the people, main people in the Central Trust then. You know, he was carrying on his head the load of having to construct a multi-crore hospital.
In May.
And this is in May. And not only construct, have a hospital inaugurated that November and have the first surgery conducted.
And at that time, one of the main sources of worry was that there were absolutely no funds in the trust kitty.
Absolutely no funds, and a promise was made.
And Swami had taken very few steps towards getting, I think at that point of time, only the drawings had been approved.
Right. There was absolutely nothing but the land was cleared.
Yes.
And he was constantly seeing this Swami there in that, you know, Kodai trip, who had the least care in the world, was, as you're saying, living that moment.
Yes.
You know, if there's anything called living that moment, that he saw that Swami was doing that. Because with the children around, Swami was at his playful best. And it was clearly, for a person who is, you know, weighed down by the immensity of the task ahead, if he sees Swami, who is the person who is actually supposed to be carrying that burden,
yes,
who's so free, you know, that perspective change which it will bring to you, I think it'll be phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And that's what Swami often did, as you said, you know, a person who had lost a dear one when he came to the presence of Ramana Maharshi. I think for all of us, what a guru or what Swami does to us is that he doesn't, you know, abracadabra, vanish all your problems, but he gives a perspective which makes those problems look so insignificant.
Right.
And whatever he does is he gives us the tools to make these problems appear insignificant, by giving you the larger picture.
larger picture such that like you have been taking yourself to be someone insignificant all that long.
Right.
You have seen yourself as an object which is, you know, which is at the mercy of nature, right. which is the mercy of circumstances, mm-hmm. at the mercy of destiny. And he shows you for what a giant you truly are.
Right.
And yeah, that, I think that is one of the things that glimpse. See, Swami was not one who kept the secret of his divinity to himself. He expressed it. But not only that, he showed us a secret that we are also equally divine, that there's nothing, it's not like he holds a monopoly over that divinity. It's within access of one and all. And you can see that his prime motivation was all the time to awaken that same divine consciousness in each one of us. I think simply because of the suffering that he could see each one of us was getting subjected to. And see, when as long as you are, bound to this body and mind, it's like one suffering Swami can, wipe it off, but only to be replaced by another. There's like absolutely no end to that. It's going to come again and again and again. Like as he said, life is an interval, like between, pleasure is an interval between
two pains.
So it's something that just keeps coming on and on and on. And at some point of time, we have to get out of that cycle.
Just a couple of days back, I was listening to one of the addresses Swami Vivekananda made at the Chicago conference.
Hmm.
Apart from the first one, he delivered a couple of others talks, and that he says this very beautiful point, what he was saying. He said, I come from the land where we don't believe in calling each other sinners.
Hmm.
Because we see each other as, the one who is the heir to the throne of immortality.
Right.
And Swami would say, Amrutasya Putra.
Yeah.
He says, that is our reality. The sin which we are doing is an aberration.
Yes.
And to relate to ourselves based on that sin is not the culture I come from.
Yeah. And Swami further elaborates, like, this kind of mistake that we make in identifying ourselves with the body and the mind. He says it's like a person who builds a house. And all these various rooms are there, and we perhaps, we are actually the space within that room, and then we go on to identify ourselves like I am the drawing room and Prem says he is the kitchen and maybe Bishu says no, I am the hall, like these are various distinctions that we make. In this relation, when Swami was actually narrating this in the discourse, I was reminded of a conversation that took place between a divine master and his disciple.
Okay.
This is a real conversation, and in that conversation, the disciple, out of ignorance, he was trying to ascertain from this divine master. He was speaking of two other gurus, perhaps contemporaries,
mm-hmm.
and he was trying to find out from this divine master which of these two gurus was superior.
Okay.
And these two gurus are all pretty well known, and anyone who reads the question kind of identifies with that questioner. Like even they are agog, they want to know why. I mean, what is the answer? He gave such a beautiful answer. He says, you are asking me to compare the space in one room with the space in another.
Beautiful.
Right? And it destroys, because at that moment, instead of seeing the guru for what he is, we are again going and identifying him with his body, with his mind, with his actions, with his circumstances. And he very simply brings us to that reality. See, as this guru and that guru, there's absolutely no comparison, simply because there's a space, there's the same space in different rooms.
Very true. In fact, even in this, Swami saying that if you remove the walls, you see that there are no differences. But the whole idea of spirituality, at least the way Swami has been trying to teach us here, at least so it appears, Swami is not asking us to remove the walls physically.
Yes.
Swami would say, you live in the bathroom the way you have to live in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You carry yourself the way you have to carry yourself when you're in the kitchen.
Kitchen, fantastic.
But yes. Understand all the time that these are just, differences of convenience. These are just distinctions of convenience that you've made.
Beautiful.
And they're not what, you have to die for.
Yes.
Like what we're doing.
Like, actually in the, like Swami talks about this, the mistake that we make with this identification. At various times, when he used to speak to students, he would talk about this aspect called self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So important, right?
Right.
At that stage, we are embarking, we are really stepping out into the world. And Swami would distinguish for us, like, what really self-confidence is. And we take it to be the, you know, what we see on the external, like the guy has a swagger or he has his way of speaking.
Mm.
And that we associate with self-confidence. And whereas we look at someone like Swami, who's, you can see that complete self-assurance, but there is no swagger about him. There's like something, he doesn't try to propagate himself so much. And so what is self-confidence? And Swami would say very simply that this is merely confidence in the self with the capital S. Now why is that? See, when we say confidence, it is completely based on something external or our thoughts about who we are. And all of them are so malleable, they can be destroyed in an instant. It takes just one small calamity, one reversal in our life, you know, something to, and that can destroy that confidence. Why? Because it is based on something our mind tells us, that at this moment, yes, you are feeling confident. At some other moment, something, a reversal happens, and then suddenly we feel, yeah, things are not going well. I'm no longer confident. But Swami would say, like, this is like a chatter, a noise in your head. And do not identify with that. And the moment you are able to see it for what it is, that is merely a thought that is in your head, and then you can go beyond that. And that was a real basis of self-confidence.
In fact, sometimes many of these t-shirts with these messages, they can give very profound messages. One I remember was, there was this t-shirt which said, remember that you are unique.
Right.
In bold, remember that you're unique. Don't forget that you're unique.
Mm.
And down it's written, just also remember that you're as unique as every other person.
Every other.
You know, I think that's what, when we say that Swami had the self-confidence, or Swami wanted us to have the self-confidence like the one which he had,
right.
It comes from the real self. You're confident because that real self is within you.
Yeah.
With the complete knowledge that the real self is in everybody you come across. So it not only, you know, results in self-confidence and self-respect, but it also, you know, results in mutual respect.
Absolutely.
You not only, you know, pride yourself for what you are, but you know that every other person you're coming across is also as valuable as you yourself are.
Right.
And I think towards the end, Swami's, you know, this beautiful analogy of the husk being removed and the rice showing up. I think this was how Swami started the first discourse in the 1990 Sambhuko series, where Swami spoke about refinement.
Is it? Okay.
When he said all process of spirituality, all sadhana is for refinement.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are step by step removing what is not you, what you are really not. And you know the many examples that Swami gave. Swami said you have a piece of steel. As steel, it's worthless. But when it goes through a process of refinement, and when you have something like a watch,
right,
the value it has is, you know,
so much more.
And yeah. Swami said, culture is that which gives you that refinement.
Right.
And when you talk of spirituality and culture, it is that which removes what you really know, are not, and which helps you shine forth with what is the, you know, the real wealth which is within you. I think, Hari, we're close to 8:30 and we have another clip, but that'll take us a little too well into Bashu's program, Outside Inside, Deep
right.
Inside, which I believe you're part of too. So dear listeners, we'll conclude this program here, but Hari is going to stay with you because he's going to be part of the next program with Bashu. Of course, there are three other guests joining. A very interesting discussion is in the offing in the next segment. I think you were all part of a youth program, is it? A youth
we were at the invitation of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organizations Karnataka. They had organized certain workshops and in colleges in, you know, right. three towns
okay.
in the district of Uttar Kannada,
mm-hmm.
In Karnataka.
Okay.
And so we'll be talking about, first of all, our experiences as we went there, the workshops and several other interesting things which we'll allow Bishu to elaborate.
Right, that's going to be interesting because here we are talking about the Pranamaya Kosha, Anumaya Kosha and the life sheets and the various jargons which a hardcore spiritualist might read.
Right.
But I think your experience must have been completely different going out into colleges and interacting with students who are are really preparing for a professional life.
Professional life, and we came up with the surprising find that there was just as much spiritual hunger.
Absolutely.
I was absolutely not prepared for that, and it was something very interesting for me to witness.
So dear listeners, that's just a teaser so that you may stay along and listen to the next program, because it's definitely going to be interesting. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai. With me was Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. And with much gratitude and love, we offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet. As I mentioned, in a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.